to Beyond the Ring, a podcast that covers all things in the stock show industry from the informative to the insane, starring Ryan Rash.
Be okay with people not liking you because most people don't even like themselves.
And Dale Hummel.
The stock show lifestyle, forging better humans.
Now on with the show.
Welcome to Beyond the Ring. This is Dale Hummel, along with co-star Ryan Rash.
Hello, hello, hello.
Ryan, we had a little break here at our place after State Fair, and it looks like it's all changing.
State Fair was 3 years ago, Dale. Move on.
It feels like that. We're getting ready to start picturing goats for sale season. Kansas State Fair, helping clients this weekend. And the most important thing that's been going on, Chase and I have been trying to convince Holly to go to Tanzania. It's not working.
Chase is supposed to be in college, getting educated.
We're planning ahead. The day he gets done with his final, we go. In the spring, that is. But it doesn't look like Holly's on board with this one.
I don't blame Holly.
She has banned us after the last trip from going back to any country in Africa.
Well, I think she's right.
Well, we're not listening to her.
Imagine that.
No, it's not going to happen. She's welcome to come along with.
She doesn't want to die.
It's safer than Chicago. How's that?
Well, 50-something people got shot in Chicago last weekend, and 8 of them are dead already.
Isn't that incredible? And Pritzker walks down the lakefront at 6 a.m. showing people it's perfectly fine. Doesn't want Trump's help. I don't even know the mayor of Chicago's name, do you?
No, because you ran off Beetlejuice, and I haven't kept up with them since she left.
We need to. This one is so irrelevant. I don't know the name, but he is not in favor of Trump sending in the National Guard. You were aware of that back.
And you don't know if Pritzker is against it or not, because yesterday Trump reached out to the governor in a press conference and said, call me. I want to help you. And he may. You don't know.
Pritzker came back. Said he was not calling him.
Oh,
period.
That's rude.
And he does not want his help because that would be.
See, if you would have just gone up and hugged the man at the Cell of Champions, this could all have been solved.
You have no idea that how well I did avoiding him.
I was told by many. Trust me.
So I think this whole National Guard. It sounds like Trump's going to move him in. He hasn't said when, but he is going to do it. Pritzker claims that Trump's moving them in. He's going to cancel elections. He's going to do basically martial law, take over, everything you can imagine. When, guess what? Pritzker brought in the National Guard during the Democrat National Convention.
There you go.
Yeah. It's okay to protect Obama and Camel Toe and Joe and a few others, but not the people on the South Side.
Mm-hmm. I guess not.
No, very crazy. There is some world news that opened my eyes a bit. Imagine that. My wife canceled Dish Network. Gone. We no longer have Dish Network.
So what do you do?
Well, we have Netflix and we have something called, Sling TV. It's far fewer channels. Must be very inexpensive is my assumption. But the only thing I really watched was Fox News or Garage News. So I get not continuing the Dish Network with the kids gone. But when she canceled it, all of a sudden, I think our streaming was coming through our Dish box. So we've been TV-less for most of the week. But I did go through the settings and got it working. And the first thing that pops up is this small boat in the Caribbean getting blown up.
Yes.
I love it. Absolutely love it. Now, that's terrible to probably say, but it's the truth.
I don't know why people would be surprised that you're like people getting blown up, but.
Well, don't you think they earned it?
Well, they were bringing fentanyl to the country from what I understand. So probably.
I believe that was it.
I'm not against it, but if they can blow them up, surely they could have like just found a boat to like arrest them. But.
Well, that
killing them's fine too. I mean, it's whatever.
That's typically what they do. And I think Trump is just putting it out there that if you're going to be running drugs, we may blow you up. Don't you think that's more of a deterrent than pulling them over and arresting them?
Well, I definitely think if you're going to lose your life, if you might think twice about it.
If I was in Venezuela thinking about running drugs to some Caribbean island and this just happened, I probably wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not saying Trump is wrong. I just found it interesting is all.
It is very, the left has come out going crazy. I mean, the normal protocol or procedure is they pull a boat up alongside them and they arrest them and they confiscate the drugs and so forth. And the problem is we've been doing this for decades, right? Has it worked?
I don't know. I don't think Biden did it at all. So decades might be a little long there.
Sir. Minus a 4-year Biden span. But we've been doing this for a long time. And I'm sure it helps to some degree, but clearly it's not the deterrent that is needed. It's kind of like Singapore. We got to visit Singapore years ago. And the taxi driver warned us, don't spit your gum out on the sidewalk. People will get beat for doing something like that in Singapore. There is zero crime because any crime is basically a death penalty. That's a deterrent that works. I don't know that we need to go that far, but I think this, as far as what they call narco-terrorist, is going to put it in the back of their mind that if they continue this shit, they're going to die. That has to work.
If it doesn't, then you're not going to prevent. I mean, if literally the thinking that you might have your life ended doesn't work, nothing's going to work. I'm sorry.
And the fact that they released the video, obviously that's what their intent is.
Oh, he's very
Trump bright. Trump is in a press conference moments after it happened. I mean, I think he's more excited about it than I am.
He was very, very happy with himself. There's no doubt. No doubt.
I mean, that shocked me a little bit. You?
What shocked
that the fact that we would just blow up a ship. A small boat with 11 people on board.
You seem all for it. I said it's fine. That's my stance. It's fine. That's where I'm
going back to that. As long as there's no question, that's what they were doing. And apparently they had that level of confidence. I mean, if there is even a 1% chance, then no, we don't need to be doing that. But if there is no question, this is what's going on, I'm in. Just like if somebody up in Chicago shoots somebody and I'm sitting there and I personally see this person shoot another person for no apparent reason. Guess, am I in favor of the death penalty on the spot rather than a trial?
Oh, I thought you said you were going to shoot him back, but
that were whatever. Yeah. Any of those things work. If there is zero, and I want to emphasize zero question that this was done and taking somebody else's life for no apparent reason or even whatever reason it may be, and other than self-defense, I'm not opposed to immediately not spending the tax dollars to prosecute, let's say.
I'm fair, full aware, sir.
Okay. I'm glad I got that off my chest. Now you were aware.
I've been aware for a while, but that's nice. Why don't you talk about something else? Why don't we talk about the fact that Trump isn't even alive? He's dead.
Yeah, they're really reaching for news, aren't they?
Yeah, it's dead.
Dead.
There was all this.
Didn't that come from your boyfriend in Minnesota?
No, he's very upset that he's not dead.
Oh, got it. I knew he just tied into it somehow.
Yes, no, he's very upset he was not dead. There was all these reports that Trump was dead. And because I guess he went on holiday for Labor Day weekend. But what I thought was the most strange about it is, if you actually went on Twitter or anything, like, you could see him and his granddaughter playing golf and all this stuff. It's like, he looks perfectly alive to me.
You did go check on him when you heard this.
Well, yes, of course I did. Duh. But I these people are just desperate people, but
they are. Well, on the world news front, it appears though Xi, Putin, and Kim are conspiring against the United States. I think we've known this for a while, but it appears as though China had the largest military display / parade ever in history just recently. And guess who was in attendance? Little Rocket Man.
And his daughter.
And his daughter and Mr. Putin. Did he bring a guest with him?
I don't know about Mr. Putin's guest, but I do know the little Rocket Man's daughter was there, and everybody is up in arms over that.
Is she
12 or 13. We don't know how old, but she's supposed to be the heir apparent.
So he's going to have to keep going for a little while.
But when you don't ever leave the country, it's not hard to stay alive.
Well, here, this time he did. Obviously, he was in China. He does, yeah, that also shocked me a little bit because he does not leave very often.
No, well, I'm going to say it's not hard to stay alive when you don't ever leave the country, sir.
Just amazing that this, those, obviously those three, Chinese military parade. I mean, all of these things are intentional to flex their muscle and push back against Trump a little bit. Do you think he could give a shit less?
No.
No. It just makes him want to dig in a little deeper and push him a little harder.
I don't know what to think about those people, but and this may have been wrong, but I was informed that the parade had something to do with the day they surrendered from World War II.
Yes, it was.
Why would you honor the day you lost?
No, that Japan surrendered.
Oh, okay.
You missed that part, I think.
I was like, what is going on?
I don't remember, obviously, how many years ago would that be, like 80? I don't know. I'm just guessing. They tied that into the.
That makes so much more sense now. Okay, way more sense.
They were celebrating their own surrender.
Yeah, I was very confused. Yeah,
that'd be a stretch.
At all, but, you know, it's fine. You don't have anything else?
That's most of the actual worldly news that I've had. I didn't get a chance to dig real deep. I am excited and waiting for the moment that Trump turns those National Guard loose in Chicago, because I'm telling you, the liberals here in the state are going to explode.
I have more news since you
go ahead.
You failed to.
I thought I did pretty well on news today.
So there's all these things are happening because it's getting closer to midterms, and so Jody Ernst too.
We are over a year away.
Okay. Well, anyway, all these people are announcing whether they're rerunning again or not. Jody Ernst isn't running from Iowa. Some of y'all are big fans. I'm kind of on the middle of her, but anyway, next. Ralph Nader is not running again.
She does hold out on some fairly important.
Yeah, exactly. I'm more not. I'm trying to be nice because I like Iowa people.
So she is not. Do you think she's not running because she's worried about her electability?
I do not know, but she's not running. But Ralph Nader is not running either. Do you know who?
Maybe. I remember Ralph Nader was. What was his old title?
Oh, no, he's the huge man that his pants are always like up in the middle of his belly.
God, I'm probably thinking
with the glasses. Else. Anyway,
no, I he's do not. I'm not aware of him.
He's a Democrat. Oh, yes, you would. If you've seen a picture of him, because he's like Schiff's little buddy. But
God, anyway, where is he from? Do we know?
I don't even know. Don't even.
Probably Illinois.
It may be. But anyway, he's not running. Anyway, all these people are announcing whether they're running, whether they're not running. All this stuff. And so all these polls are coming up. And I told Dale about one of these polls, and he did not even want to talk about it.
I don't even remember this.
Hmm?
I don't remember what you're talking about.
The presidential poll.
You did not bring this up.
Yes, I did. I told you that Butt Plug was winning.
No, you did not discuss
yes,
this
I
with
did.
Me.
It was in you the group. You have lost your mind.
Oh, that doesn't count. I thought you meant you called me about it. Yes, it's very possible it's in the group text. I may have missed that. I'm not denying that you sent it now.
I don't think
correct.
It's Ralph Nader. It's Jerry Nader. But anyway.
Got it there. That sounds better.
Maybe there is a Ralph Nader. I don't know. But
so what is your boyfriend doing? He is running or is not running?
It's Jerry Nadler. Yes. So anyway.
Go back to your South Bend buddy, your boyfriend.
Anyway, so they did a poll on the Democratic field, and it had Gavin Newsom and, you know, AOC and all these people in it, whatever. But Butt Plug is the winner. So in this one poll.
He is the lead. Was it a reliable poll, a reputable poll?
I don't know. It was on Fox News, so I'm just saying. Anyway, he was the winner in that poll. Now, the next day, there was a poll that came out that Gavin Newsom had over 1/4 of support. So, who knows? But I found this interesting because even though Dale doesn't remember this conversation in this text message group that we have.
Sometimes I don't pay attention to him.
I said if Pete Buttplug won the Democratic nomination and J.D. Vance won the Republican nomination, that we were going to have a gay president anyway, regardless.
I do not know why you continue to pick on J.D.
I'm funny, but anyway, so there you go. Dale, you're going to have a hard time with that, so.
No, I am perfectly fine with this. We've discussed this recently. You don't want to go down this path.
Okay, I'm just saying, look out, world. Those are your options.
I would like Pete to be the Democrat nominee. I think he's probably easier to defeat than most any I can think of.
He did better than anybody but Bernie and Biden the last time.
I mean, I'd rather have him than your slimy person out in California.
I think AOC should be it. I think she's the easiest to beat.
No, I would agree. I think she would like to be.
Oh, I think she's going to run, but
I don't think she makes it out of the primary. But well, that's right. They don't have primaries anymore, do they?
They just decide. Well, they
yeah. So maybe she gets the nomination.
Maybe they won't have primaries again. Maybe they'll just decide like they did last time. Who knows?
Yeah, they canceled the people's wishes to decide who they should run for president. That slipped my mind.
Yeah, and the only other thing that I have to bring to the current events is CNN brought up a new poll this week.
They still exist?
Yes, they do. 18% support the Democratic Party. 18%. That's the number. That's the percentage of Democrats that are happy with the Democratic Party.
And do we know how many support the Republican Party and how many would be kind of, they don't care either way?
No. This is the lowest number of since polling of for the Democratic Party, that their support is down to 18%.
They really do not seem to have any cohesion or any direction whatsoever. The extreme left probably continues to pull more than any of the moderates. And if they would make a strong shift to the middle, it could be good for them. I don't think the extreme left is going to they're going to continue to speak louder and be heard more. And hopefully that's the image that the Democratic Party continues to have.
There you go.
Anything else for current event?
No, I'm done now. I just wanted you to know that you're gay president and the Democrats are going to have a gay president. So it's going to be gay all the way around. So there you go.
Maybe it's possible. Anything is possible.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a sponsor for our main topic, Merck Animal Health. Anyone in our industry knows that effectively managing your time and hitting breeding windows are crucial to success. SenseHub Cow-Calf from Merck Animal Health gives you the ability to improve both. With 24/7 monitoring, SenseHub Cow-Calf helps save time spent on visual checks and delivers data you can use to detect heats and make informed decisions on reproduction timing for AI and embryo transfer. This changes everything. Learn more at sensehub-cowcalf.com. Thank you, Merck Animal Health, for your continued support of this podcast. It's hot. We know it's hot. And I can assure you, if your animals are not drinking, they're not going to get along. ShowFresh H2O is the only product out there that completely eliminates chlorine from drinking water, keeping your animals hydrated and ready to hit the show ring. If you want to feel better about your purchase, this product is made right here in America by good people. You can pre-order ShowFresh H2O now at your local farm store, your favorite show supply trailer, or head over to swampfox.com. Stepping out of your comfort zone. Ryan, you thought of this probably long ago, but brought it up more recently. I like it. Tell me what direction you're going with it.
Actually, I was judging a show this past week, and I was talking to one of the ringmen, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, you could go through the barns at almost any county type show or anything like that, and you could identify which exhibitors had only been to the county show and which exhibitors had gone places other than a county fair with I mean, I'm not going to say 100% accuracy, but I'd say 90, 95% accuracy. And that
now, would this not be considered profiling, maybe discrimination?
I don't care.
Continue.
People discriminate against me all the time and profile me all the time, and you don't give a shit. So anyway, moving on. Next. Back to my point. You do that with 90, 95% accuracy, and that if everyone, not just the people that just go to county fairs, but maybe if you just go to your state fair or whatever, and you go out and you would go to another show, and me and this gentleman discussed, you know, that some people blame that it's too expensive, that they can't, you know, entries and all this other stuff and yada, 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 traveling to another show multiple hours away, da, 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 and them thinking that they're not going to do any good, that they just never get outside of that little bubble that they're in, so they never learn anything. And so that's what I'm here to talk about today, is that I think people need to get outside their comfort zone, because when you stop learning, you stop living.
I love that part right there, that if you stay in that comfort zone, you are, I'm not saying stopping your learning process, but you've slowed it up to near zero. And I think this title, the first thing that comes to my mind is exactly what you talked about. And I'm going to be the first
that I was to admit, profiling people.
Well, that as well. I do not get to a lot of county fairs. I do not spend a lot of time at our county fair. But I do visit with Ryan about county fairs. And I do remember going to county fairs quite a bit, that it was amazing to me the difference between those that showed at Jackpot shows, state fairs, national shows, versus the group that may only show at their county fair. And nothing wrong with that, but the downside to it is the assumption is that every show is run exactly like that county fair that they're exposed to. And they fail to realize there's different ways of doing things, that the same rules that may be in place there may not be in place, or different rules at another one. Things can be done differently, and in many cases, maybe better. But that bubble you talked about, Ryan, I'm afraid that we can go with show families, superintendents, fair managers, fair board members, that if they only see their own county and their own show, they really have no idea what's going on outside of there, and they assume what's going on there is the best way to do things.
Right. And I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was the second portion of the intro that I was going to say, that I don't think this should be limited only to exhibitors. I think it should extend to just who you're talking about, fair managers, staff, all this stuff, to see how other people do things. Because once again, no show is perfect, but there are, you know, different ways of approaching different situations. And like Dale said, if you've only seen what happens at your fair, then your eyes are closed off to other ways. And so I think if you are a fair manager, or you are on staff at these shows or anything like that, even I can tell you that there are people at national level shows that go to other national level shows to see how it's different and how it's done differently. They may not implement everything or change anything, but they go to see and learn and observe. And so I think that's an important part too, if you're in the role of making the decisions of how things are run.
I think this is one of the single best things that any of those people in those categories can do. And I don't want to point fingers that all county fair managers or board members or families that just show at county fairs don't go do this, because some do. And there are some county fairs out there that, when we've talked about a few of them, that are absolutely amazing, that obviously somebody has done a brilliant job of gathering information and putting on a show that's incredible. So again, it's not all county shows by any means, or all county fair managers or anything like that, but there's no question there are some that get caught up in that little bubble. And for me, it's just, I'd like to give them just a little push to go see other things.
As I was talking about at the beginning, when I was discussing it with this gentleman or whatever, he's like, you know, the expense and all this other stuff, and they're afraid that they're not going to do well. And we're talking back about exhibitors again. there's nothing wrong with, number one, going to a show and not doing well. Like, that happens to all of us. It just does. It's just part of life. You're not going to win every single show. And so I hate that maybe a deterrent that you think if you load up and you go to a jackpot show or you go to your state fair or something like that, that the reason you're not doing it is because you're not going to do well. In the end, only one person's going to win. But the stuff that you can learn and the things that you can see and observe, that will make you a winner at that show if you've never been anywhere else. And I truly, truly believe that. And I wish people would understand that more, because you may not continue to go to jackpot shows and you may never go to state fair again, but all the things that you'll see, observe, and learn while you're at this bigger show, you can take that home to your program and use it and implement it for your county fair projects, and you're going to do even better than you did the year before. And so don't let being afraid of how you're going to place be a deterrent for you. And then the other thing is, if that is such a deterrent, or you think it's too expensive to haul your animal and pay entry fees and all this, just you and your family load up and go and watch. And I don't want to hear an excuse why you can't do that, because you can.
This is very simple. And that is it right there. I understand it may be too expensive. You may not be able to get the time away from home or off of work to do it, to be there for the entire length of that show and exhibiting. But more times than not, you're going to be able to get down there for at least a day.
Yeah.
Or wherever that may be.
And you can probably, if you don't have your own animal there, you can spend a lot more time just watching other people, observing things, instead of having to worry about taking care of your animal or getting your animal ready for the show. So I'm saying that's equally as good, if not better, if you're solely there to learn things that you have not seen before, etc. Going without an animal is probably preferable. Not as much fun, because you probably won't get to show or participate, but probably preferable from a learning standpoint.
And don't just sit at the show ring. Go back in the barn. Spend time back in the barn and observe what's going on at the wash rack or the fitting stand or wherever it may be. Engage. Completely engage and learn. And you will get better. That is a part of it. And I absolutely love that idea, Ryan. And I think there are families that do this, and that's good. They're getting better because of it. And back to your we don't want to go because we're not going to do well enough. You're right. Depending on your expectations or goals, more people probably leave a state fair thinking they did not succeed than those that believe they accomplished their goal. And I don't know that, I'm not saying that's good and I'm not encouraging that, but for many people, the goal is to win. And as you stated, there's only one, that's it. So you're going to walk away or drive home feeling a little bit defeated, but hopefully you've gained more knowledge. You can come back and go harder the next show.
Right. But I mean, we've talked about different goals on and having different multiple goals on. We had a whole episode about that before and stuff like that. And I think that's important, but I do think that in this type of environment situation that we're talking about here, that maybe somebody that's never gone anywhere but the county fair, I think that the most important thing that you can do, and like, you know, Dale was saying, don't just stay at the ring. If I was there to learn about how to get better at taking care of my animal, what to do, all that, I probably wouldn't ever be at the ring except to watch some people show. I would be in the back. I would be watching how other people wash, how other people clip, how other people do daily care stuff, you know, things like that. And the access to being able to figure out who's on top of this game these days is real simple. It's all over social media. It's all over the internet, all that stuff. And so, you know, identify those people and make sure that you're watching the ones that are successful at it. And like I've said in other times before, if it's the day before the show and nobody's really doing something real important and you want to go up and ask some people some questions, they're probably going to give you the time to do that. Now, if you walk up to them while they're fitting the animal right before the show, they're probably not. But like, people will answer your questions and take time to talk to you and stuff like that. You just got to make sure that it's in an appropriate time when they're not trying to get their kid's animal ready to go into the ring and stuff like that. But I think those are real important things to do and to think about, because like I said, the end goal of this is I'm not trying to increase numbers at a jackpot show or the state fair. What I'm trying to do is to get these families and these exhibitors that may not have any intention of going or exhibiting anywhere else but their county fair. And that's perfectly fine. But I want you to be able to be the best that you can be at that county fair. And one of the easiest ways to do that is by going to a bigger show, watching other people. I think in Texas, we get really jaded because we have so many Texas major shows that are as big or bigger than national shows, actually. And so we don't realize that for a large majority of these states, that unless you go to one of the four or five national shows, that state fair is the biggest thing that you can go to. And so a lot of people go to their state fair, but they may not go any further than that. And I get that traveling to a national show from some states would be difficult, whether it is with an animal or without. But the same concept and the same principle applies. You're going to learn stuff. You're going to see stuff at national shows or Texas majors or OIE that you don't see at other places, because the level of competition is at those shows the highest anywhere in the country. And that's just facts. And so if you're somebody that wants to be competitive at your state fair, then this is another way for you to learn, to do, to grow, is by, like I said, even if it's just going and observing, go to a national show, go to a Texas major, et cetera, and learn from that experience.
I think that's good, Ryan. And I did not get to exhibit a lot when I was growing up beyond our county show. And we had very few jackpots in our state fair. But by the time I hit college, I was able to go and see a lot of shows here in the Midwest, but not exposed to shows outside of that. And I can remember two situations that really opened my eyes to just what we're talking about here. Not only are things done differently from one county to the next, or from a jackpot show to the state fair, or state fair to a national show, there's always things that are a little bit different that we could pull from. And as an exhibitor, learn from, as a show manager, incorporate into our show, whatever segment of the population we're talking about, I think there's advantages to doing that. I can think of two times that my eyes were opened. My freshman year in college was the first time that my sophomore year in college, that I attended Houston Livestock Show and Rodeo, and nearly every year since then. But that first time, Ryan, I'm telling you, when prior to that, I guess I'd been to Louisville, and that's a spectacular event. But that's when we were in obviously the show was still in the Astrodome, or the Astrodome was still there, and you still had that, what do you even call it? The
Astro Hall.
Astro Hall, that's it, where there was a circle and just, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, that blew me away. And I know you grew up with it. It just seemed normal to you. But I assure you, me going to that show the first time, and you've got your volunteers out there with their sticks blocking off the little pathway for cattle to come through, or I can't even put it into words how blown away I was with just the Astro Hall. Unreal.
Right. And like, I can tell you that there's been a lot of times that when I have brought fitters down from Yankee country to either most normally to help fit steers at the Fort Worth Stock Show. Sometimes heifers at other shows, but mainly the Fort Worth Stock Show for steers. And I'm telling you, if it's their first time there, they're like, yeah, I didn't think it was going to be like this. And
overwhelming.
Right. And like, I mean, obviously I'm not bringing in people that don't know what they're doing. I'm bringing in people that are at the top of the game and yet they've never been to the Fort Worth Steer Show and they're still just blown away by it. And it every time that I bring somebody that had never been there before, it was the same reaction. So like I said, it doesn't matter what level of expertise you're at or how good you are at things. You can still experience things that you did not know existed. And those things are going to help you gain growth, gain knowledge, gain expertise, wisdom, training, all these things. But you've got to take the initiative to do it.
And it may not be in your comfort zone, going back to our title. You step out of there. The second time, Ryan, would have been that really opened my eyes to, wow, this is just different. There's something different about this. And then there's others, but these two stuck out, that the sophomore year at Houston. And then the first time I judged in California, I was probably in grad school, is my assumption. I don't remember exactly, but I believe it was even a pig show. And in the Midwest at that time, you would have exhibitors maybe after the show come up and visit with you or their family and thank you and so forth, but not a lot. Usually if you had somebody approaching you after the show at that time, it was going to be a little bit of a battle and it just is what it is. But I get to the show and the very first class, I place the hogs and I start talking them. And this is going to sound crazy to people right now because this happened a very long time ago and it was so out of the norm for me. I was really set back. When I talked the first hog that came out, the young person came up and shook my hand while I was talking it. Same with the second and third. And I'd never been exposed to that before, Ryan. It just kind of, I thought it was great that they were that appreciative. I thought it was different, but that just didn't happen at that time here in the Midwest. Now we see it a lot and we have debates whether we should do it then or later, or what it should be done. But do you remember a time when that wasn't normal?
I'm trying to think because like...
I think it's more of a regional thing.
Yeah, because I don't remember the whole shaking of hands thing becoming something in Texas, or at least, or till here last 10 years or so. Like, maybe it should be longer than that. Like, I'm not going to tell you that, like, when I was showing, you didn't go, like, if you won, you go up, shake his hand. But most times it was after the show. Unless that judge came up to you and wanted to shake your hand congratulating you as winning something, you normally waited till after the show to go up. And that was just how it was. But I think that, you know, you're right. And I don't know if we've ever had a podcast topic about it, but there are definitely different spots in the United States that there are different formats of how things work. And, you know, just going across and judging as much as I have, you kind of figure those out and stuff. And so I'm not as shell-shocked by anything I see anymore, but I could, just like you, the first time I judged in California and they're all out here in these white get-ups with little green Mount Me hats. And I was like, exactly. What's going on?
Yeah.
I was like, no. What's going on here? What is this about? And like I said, that's how they do things.
But it hits you very odd, didn't it?
Oh, it still does to this day. I mean, I literally just judged in California last show. And it still just hits me odd.
Long ago, I judged the Oregon State Fair and they came out in their FFA jackets. It was 99 plus and humid, and they're in their FFA jackets. And I'm thinking, oh, this seems crazy. So what do I do, Ryan? I get on the microphone and tell them, hey, I don't mind if you take them off. What did the ag teachers think of that?
They probably wanted to
hang them. Oh, that did not go over well. I guess I should have discussed it with them. But just common sense told me, wow, I appreciate we have a dress code and this is part of it, but this is crazy. Another example, Ryan, would be my wife, Holly, grew up in Jackson County, Oregon. Showing primarily just at her county fair. And she truly believed one of the biggest reasons that kids in her county would show livestock is it because it would build a huge college fund. You would make money showing livestock.
Yeah, that
she
only
thought that there. She thought that was how it was everywhere.
That only happens there.
I mean, and I'm being very serious. I'm kind of joking about this, but she truly grew up thinking that it was absolutely expected for you to make money. There were banks in town that would loan kids money to buy the steer, knowing it was going to sell well and they would get paid back. And I mean, it was expected you were going to make quite a bit of money each year if you were involved in that project.
Regardless of placing.
Yes, doesn't matter. You could be last in class and you're going to make money on your project because their auction is so strong in the way it's organized.
That's what I tried to stress when I judged that fair earlier. That they don't know how good they have it because, like, your wife was under that impression. That I'm not saying Jackson County is the only place in the United States that happens, but it would be one of a handful.
Yeah, I mean, and there are others,
but I'm
the opposite. Growing up, I wasn't going to make money showing, and that prevented me from doing a lot of showing because of the financial aspect. And I think it still does today to a large degree, especially at the state fair and national shows. It's if you're going there to compete and try to win, it's going to be expensive. And it's just part of it. But I would have grown up the opposite, thinking, well, if you're showing livestock, it's going to cost you money. You're not going to make money at it, period. And I think 99% of the population would probably look at it that way today, with exception of Jackson County and maybe a few others still. There are probably still people in Jackson County and a few of those other counties, Ryan, that still think that.
I'm sure. And that's why I kept trying to stress to them on the microphone. Y'all don't know how good y'all have it here. This is far from the norm. So be very, very thankful and very, very grateful of what you have, because this is.
And they're not looking normal. At you like, what are you talking about?
Exactly.
For county fair.
Like I was an absolute lunatic, but it's fine. Most people think that. So, and then, you know, going back to what Dale and I both touched on at the first, about that this isn't just something that exhibitors can find. You know, to do, but I really do think, and like I said, fair managers, people, staff, all this other stuff, and like I said, even at national shows, other people that run national shows go to other shows. They may not implement everything, but they take some of the things they see, they do, they whatever. If you are one of those people that is running a show, running a fair, please just go visit a bigger one. And you may not change anything. I think you probably will. But just to say that you've gone, you've done, you've seen, because I think the biggest problem, and I'm not going to accuse all county fairs, but a lot of county fairs, is it's been this way since 1812, so why would we change it? And I think that's what the biggest problem with most county fairs is that type of mentality. And so if you go out and you see how other people do it, maybe you won't be so dead set that this is the only way it can be done.
Agreed completely. And Ryan, I'm gonna branch out a little bit, because I don't want to end this just yet. Into something that I know you did. I did a little bit, but not near to the extent. But let's look at some of the show families that maybe the parents grew up with a swine background and that's what they were comfortable in, and so that's what their kids are showing. What about maybe if you have somebody around that can guide you, branching out and trying another species? I believe you showed all four species, yep. Correct?
Oh, no. And we had a topic just, I don't remember, a couple of months ago, and I think it was just do it or whatever. And I am a firm believer that everyone, if they have the funds, and I'm not saying to do another species, it's the greatest thing that you could ever do. I really believe that. And I mean, you don't have to do all four or whatever, but like, if you just show, and it may just be one time, something other than what you are comfortable with, what you're used to, what your parents did. And that's why you got into showing this. I think it is the greatest thing for any kid to go and just into a different species and be able to learn and grow and literally just go in there and be like, I'm going to do this and it may not work out, but this, we're going to give it this shot, because I think that's one of the greatest character building things that you can ever do. Because like I said, my dad was an ag teacher, but his base knowledge was cattle. And by the time that I started showing, my parents had already been divorced. And so like I wanted to do it all. And my stepfather was cattle and everybody that was helping us was cattle. I was like, no, we're going to do other things. And so we had to, you know, find other people to help us. But without that, I'd been a completely different human being.
No, I couldn't agree more, Ryan, with that. And this is a good example. We when we talk about this title, stepping out of your comfort zone, and one of the very first things that Ryan mentioned is that's how we learn. That if we stay in our comfort zone, I'm not saying we're not learning anything, but it's pretty minimal because we're already in that area of comfort that we have knowledge base and experience in. I can use when we decide to show cattle or go to other species with my kids. I'd shown cattle and worked for different cattle operations long ago, but it'd been long enough that I promise you it took a little while for that learning curve to come back and for me to get back into that whole process that we're going to feed cattle, we're going to work cattle this way, we're going to put a cooler in, all these things. But all of it, again, that's part of that learning experience that is so good. And I'm not encouraging you to do this blindly where you're going to go buy, say you show pigs, you're going to go buy a goat and you have no idea how to feed it and there's nobody willing to help you and there's no resources. No, that's a terrible experience. But if you have a breeder, a broker, a neighbor, a friend, a relative that has some experience in that and is willing to give you at least some basic guidance, then I'm all in, completely in on trying those things. And you can even take this, and I'll use the state of Illinois as an example. Between Illinois and Indiana, the number of livestock judging teams in high school that give reasons in Illinois is very limited compared to the number of teams in Indiana that give reasons. It's almost become cultural, just expected in Indiana that you're going to do that, and the kids are pushed a little harder into it, where in Illinois you're not. And I can assure you that there are a few really good programs that are awfully competitive in Illinois, but then the rest of them, it's not in their comfort zone. Maybe that ag teacher doesn't feel comfortable with it, but pushing yourself as an individual to go seek out a 4-H leader or somebody that can help you with that and just push yourself a little further to do something like that. Or the livestock judging kids. Maybe look at doing skillathon at your state contest or even a national contest or a quiz bowl, or just push yourself out of your normal. Because when you get really good in one specific area, and Ryan, I'm very, very guilty of this, that I tend to stay in certain zones at different times of my life and trying to become the best I can at that. But then when I jump into something else, all of a sudden that's where the learning begins again. Because you get so comfortable, so knowledgeable, so at ease with what you're doing. And if it's working, you're not gathering a lot more new information. So there's a lot of things that you can do that other than showing livestock. Think about some of the kids that play sports. If you're just playing one sport all your life, maybe reach out if there's time to do it, try another one. It's in all facets of life that we need to get out of that comfort zone to be able to learn. And I can think of an issue that I had all the way through, as long as I can remember, junior high into high school. I was petrified to get up in front of the class and speak, petrified of public speaking in general. Get to college, then oral reasons.
Clearly overcome this.
No, I mean, it was hard. And I can tell you how I overcame it. As a teaching assistant in graduate school, obviously up in front of a class, it began to get better. And I came to the realization that if I wanted to improve on public speaking, I need to do more teaching. And that was part of the reason I took a job as an instructor. And but it was not easy, I can assure you, at first, because it was just something I avoided, so it wasn't in my comfort zone. Now it's a little more so. I feel really good about speaking in front of large groups, but I still have an issue, Ryan. I have a hard time speaking and socializing in a group of two or three people. Can't explain it. Don't understand it.
Normally we shut you up. So I call bullshit on
there. There are a few people that I'm comfortable with that it maybe is a little bit easier, but no. So this applies to almost all facets of life. If you can step out of that comfort zone, that's where you're going to start to learn that much more.
Yes, yes, yes.
Do you have anything in summary on this before we go to your favorite portion?
No, I think that you summed it up well. And I just want to reiterate that I do think it is important, and I do think that it is worthwhile that, like, quit finding an excuse not to do this. Like I said, don't use the excuse, well, I don't want to take my animals because we're not going to do good or whatever. Quit using excuses to put this off and just go and do it. Even if it's just your family going to observe, I promise you it will be worthwhile and beneficial. And no matter what level that you want to compete at, if you are always striving to stay out of your comfort zone and to learn more knowledge and to see how other people are at success at it, then you can go back to that level and be more competitive and have more success than you had before.
Perfect. I would love to tell you a little bit about our sponsor. You've heard me talk about the original Phantom Halter, Be Gone Adhesive Remover, and BW Final Drive that assist with County Fair premium auctions. These products and services are brought to you by the Hunker Show family. This family is deeply rooted in the show stock industry. They get it. They love it. We appreciate their support of this podcast and the junior livestock industry. Visit phantomhalter.com for more information and use the coupon code BTR for a 10% discount on all purchases. It's time for question and answer. Mandy gives us the first question. First of all, thank you for being the voice of the junior stock show world. I kind of like this lady. How about you, Ryan? She's good.
Question.
My daughter is interested in judging collegiately, livestock judging, I should say, junior college or straight into 4 years, a question, and which ones or what criteria should we be looking at? We've had similar questions, more about where to go.
To answer the first part, if she wants to go and wants to be competitive, she's going to have to go to junior college. I just don't think that there's any way around that.
You did not?
Yes. And I am also an obsessed human being that has...
Okay.
I mean...
In all seriousness, you are correct, Ryan. If you want to be very competitive, you at this point, you pretty much have to start.
I did not. And I'm not saying you can't do it, but you have to be borderline obsessed to get over that hump if you don't.
And there are still a few that do very well coming straight through the four-year program. I don't want to say that doesn't
right. matter. I'm not saying it's impossible, but
it's
I'm just
less
saying
than not.
For the overwhelming majority, I think that it'd be more beneficial to go to junior college. And then I get asked countless times, whether it's junior college or whether it's senior college, where should I go? And my answer is always going to be the same. If you are serious about this and you're serious about going to college to be on a judging team, then you need to be serious about going and visiting those schools and having a one-on-one meeting with those coaches, because some of them you are going to vibe and gel with and some of them you are not. And until you're in that position where you can sit across from them and have that one-on-one interaction, you're never going to know. And if there is anything in you that says, you know, this may not work, don't pick that school. Don't.
No, because it won't.
It will not. Because I'm telling you, if there is anything, I mean, whether you were 2 years at a junior college or in the senior college deal, that person basically owns your life. And so you've got to be able to get along with them. And it's got to be a great working relationship, and you've got a gel and you've got a vibe. And that's why I say, if you're serious about it, then you better be serious about going to these places and meeting with these coaches.
Perfect. And speaking of that, I apologize, Ryan. Maybe you haven't heard it, but I have a person here pounding in fence posts this morning. Good scheduling on my part. That's actually good. Is a former student of mine that would have went through the judging program and so forth. So I apologize for that background noise. Ryan's comments in this are dead on, in my opinion. If you can figure out what the atmosphere of that group of people that's attending that school, it's interesting to me that there is not one school that's going to fit everyone. Each individual person is going to have a better experience or embrace the experience more, be more positive on it at different schools. There's no one school that I can just say, here's the one you go to. But I can assure you, for each individual, going and visiting and doing as much research as you possibly can, talking to others that have been there, talking to people that are maybe familiar with the different junior colleges, every bit of research you can do is going to be beneficial, because that is going to play a huge role in your path. I mean, monster role in the path that you take in life. So do everything you can and find the one that is right for you. It's the best guidance that I can give, Mandy, on this one. And I wish your daughter the best of luck moving into college. The next question comes from Beth. Ryan and Dale, have you ever considered doing consulting work for show families? This would be so beneficial for so many. I'm not sure exactly what level of consulting she's referring to. I tend to consult every single day.
I was going to say, I've done it. I mean, like, it's, like I said, when people bought steers and heifers from me or other species on occasion, then yeah, we consulted all the time. Like having just a consulting firm that you know was just geared towards show families. No, I haven't done that. But I
think it would be popular, but I'm with you, Ryan. I mean, I can't tell you how many texts or calls I take a day visiting with families. And I could say that have purchased from us, but I get them from many families that don't as well, and try to give them some time if possible. But definitely the families that have bought from us, we're not only myself, but Craig and Katie, Tara, Holly, all of us are involved in helping with the feeding, with as much or as little as you would like in terms of guidance and advice. And that is as probably time consuming as anything I do in the day. So if it was done, I think maybe Beth's referring to doing it outside of what I would have sold or what you would have brokered necessarily. It would be it'd be time consuming, and I don't know that you could. It'd be hard to put a dollar amount on that.
Yeah, that was the other thing that I was going to say. I think it would definitely. That would. I mean, if. Like in business, you're going to open it up to everybody. And I mean, you would have to limit who you were going to take because there's only so many hours in the day. And so I'm not saying that it would not be beneficial or that people wouldn't want that service, but I think that there would be also some things that you would have to figure out, like how much you're going to take, how much you're going to charge, how much access, all this other stuff. My head hurts now.
It would be a little bit complicated. I'm not opposed to it. I think there's a need for that in our industry, and I'm sure some people are doing that. It appears to be now more coming from, if you choose a breeder partially for that reason, because they will give you that service, or a broker. Maybe you have an ag teacher or 4-H leader that does it. Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's a big void in our industry, and there's a lot of people out there that just from the questions and answers that we get with this podcast, Ryan, that are seeking that kind of knowledge and would probably really enjoy and benefit from some type of consulting like that. Chad gives us the next question. I've wanted to send this question in from the beginning. Long ago, the show ring used to help guide the commercial industry, even as a source to view and or purchase breeding stock. Then it went to where the commercial industry was used as a base to work from in the show ring. But now the correlation seems less than ever. Do you see this changing into the future as history often repeats itself?
Dale,
I think right now I'm great with this one. I would agree with him. There is less connection between where we're at in the show ring and the commercial world. And there used to be the show ring used to truly guide physical type and kind for a lot of the more prominent purebred seed stock breeders, commercial breeders alike. There was a time I can remember using the hog industry as an example when we had hogs so fat in the 80s that the packing plant said, no, we need to lean things up. And they incorporated a buying grid or a lean buying type program where you were paid a premium to bring lean hogs and discounted for fat hogs. And all of a sudden we went to raising, we had show hogs that you could count every rib that were so bare lean. It was insane. I think partially because the industry gave a little bit of a push that way. I don't see it now. And I continue to tell Ryan, we're going to have a podcast dedicated strictly to something in the manner of, it's interesting that we don't have an anchor right now. We don't have that base in some judge's mind to pull from. In other words, we need to maybe stay in this general market weight range. We need to stay in these general parameters if it's a market animal in terms of where their carcass attributes are at. And I think in some cases, the goat ring, there is zero. I mean, near zero, I should say. We still talk about cutability a little bit. Same to a certain degree in the sheep ring. And I think because there's not an organized association or packing plants that are very defined and here's what we're paying a premium for, here's what we want in the sheep and goat world. But that does exist in the swine and cattle world. And there are some judges, more so in cattle, that will still relate back to that and use that as an anchor. But when there is no anchor, it goes a lot of different directions. So Chad, back to your question, I don't know. Right now, I think we're at the will of or the whim of those that have the most influence that may be judging the most nationally. And if there's a few of those judges that are going in the same direction, that's probably the direction the trend will go. And we've talked about this, Ryan and I, and other things. Maybe it's the breeders that have a pretty good handle on the industry if they start breeding for a different type. Because as a judge, you can't always find that one that you have in your mind going in there that you might want to use. It's all about what's brought to you. And that kind of starts at the breeder level. What direction are they taking it? And those kind then are going to present themselves to you more in the show ring. So it is very, very complex. And I talked a lot in circles here, so I don't know, Chad, if I even answered your question, but it's a hard one to answer. And I think my answer is I just don't know. Fair
Yay.
Enough. Well, that concludes our episode today. And Ryan, thank you for the topic. I love that one. And you know, when I reflecting back on one thing, I've gone from not wanting to get out of my comfort zone as a younger person to now the adrenaline of getting out of that comfort zone is very appealing to me. And I think part of the reason that Chase and I head off to different countries in Africa is when we go there, rent a car.
You want to be eaten by a lion.
No, we just go because everything we're doing, even getting from point A to B, is out of our comfort zone. I can remember in the Okavango Delta, I think is where we were. We had to reroute twice because elephants on the little path that we were on were challenging us and wouldn't let us through. And we were so, I'm not going to say lost, because you're never really to find a main path at that point after we had to detour was a huge challenge. But that was all. I mean, I enjoy at this point going out of my comfort zone. Seems a little crazy, but I kind of that is part of the appeal that I think we have going that direction. But please do so. Don't.
My advice ever. To Holly is not to go to Africa and make sure all their life insurance is paid up. You'll be a wealthy great. Woman one day.
Great, great, great. Until next week, be safe.
Y'all come back now, you hear?